The Unpublished Podcast with Amy and James.
Hi artists, welcome to another episode of the Unpublished Podcast. Today we are going to list all of our failures and talk about what we learned from them.
Failures, it's such an unpopular topic.
I know, it's perfectionism and failure.
Yeah.
They're not trendy topics.
I feel like we're setting ourselves up for low views this week, which as you all know, completely devastates us. And we do constantly check the analytics of our podcast at least once every 6 months. So when I check that one time, I'll look back and I'll be like, oh my God, why did none of you listen to this episode? I love this topic. I think that failure is, I know it kind of sounds like a cliche now, but it's one of those basic things that is just so fucking true, which is that failure is what all successful careers are built on, essentially. Like, would you agree with that?
Of course. And I'm actually just going through the final edits of We Need Your Art, and the failure chapter is in the abundance section of the book. So we have a resistance section of the book and we have like a building an abundant practice section of the book. And I put failure there because I think that failure isn't about resistance. It's not a bad thing. It is an exciting thing. And with a reframe, it's mandatory, obviously. Like, failure is mandatory. But I also think if you want to thrive as a creative, you have to get comfy with it in some way or another.
And of course, you're never going to be 100% comfy with failure. But it's about...
Yeah, I was thinking that.
It's about the ability to essentially learn from it as fast as possible and to bounce back from it as fast as possible, because it is the ultimate teacher.
Yeah, it's and the ultimate.
Even though, you know, I don't want to have this idea that every time you fail, it means that what you were doing was wrong and that you can then do the opposite. But I think it's like every time you fail, you're getting a lot of good information usually. And every time you fail, you are giving yourself the opportunity to re-solidify that you want what you want.
Yeah, I agree. I completely agree. I've said it a million times on this podcast, but that Jerry Seinfeld quote of pain is just information rushing in to fill a void. I love it. Like, and that's what failure is. It's information rushing in to fill a void. So I think if we go through some of these failures that we've navigated, I think we can speak deeper into this topic.
And as you would all know, we were so organized for this episode and we talked about this for at least 30 seconds before the episode started. So I've actually got no idea what failures we're going to come up with here. I know that we have a bunch. We have so many, especially if you look back, you know, actually that's not true. I was going to say, especially if you look back to our earlier career, but we still fail constantly.
We still fail in all small the ways. Fucking time.
And I think this is the thing, you know, definition of failure is important because it annoys me. I used to get annoyed when some very successful, wealthy athlete would be like, adversity, I'm here because of adversity. And it was often, we love you, America, but it was a very American attitude. Nothing wrong with that, but just seemed to be always some kind of American sports person being like, adversity, adversity. And
yeah.
I used to be like, okay, yeah, what adversity have you had in your life? But I mean, the fact of the matter is, when you're doing something that you really love, like if you're a professional athlete and you break your ankle,
yeah,
that's hugely... Yeah. I'm not going to say traumatic, but it's extremely disappointing for you.
Yeah.
And I think that often the best athletes and often the best artists are the ones who are able to go through something like that. Like, you know, maybe if you're an artist, you lose a whole draft of, if you're a writer, you lose a whole draft of your book you're working on or something. Or say you get rejected by some thing that you were really putting your hopes on. Or if you're an athlete, you break an ankle or do an ACL or something. It's the people who get hungry in that moment. I think that time and time again, bounce back. And it's this thing that Amy and I love from the podcast we sometimes reference Chasing Excellence with Ben Bergeron. And I don't think Ben Bergeron coined this framework, but essentially he's got like tiers of your ability to react to things. And the, you know, bottom tier is the pessimist. Something bad happens, you go, oh, of course it was going to happen. And then you sort of just get more and more pessimistic. You know, and then it goes up to, you know, through the optimist. And then basically the top tier above the realist is the warrior mindset. And the warrior mindset is like, not only am I not afraid to fail, not only am I not afraid for things to go wrong, I'm excited for it. And that is almost impossible to be in that state all the time.
It is.
And we are, of course, we are not in that state all the time.
No.
But if you can like get just a sliver of it, it is the most fucking potent, powerful thing you can possibly imagine. Like when we are able to do it, when it's like, oh, great, we didn't make as many sales as we wanted to on that. Or, oh, that, you know, chapter of the book wasn't as good as I wanted to. Wow, what an amazing opportunity to try something new. And I'm so excited for it. When it happens, like, and maybe it happens 1 in 10 times.
Yeah.
It's mind-blowing.
Yeah.
Would you agree?
Yes, I completely agree. I'm just thinking back to all the... Recently, James will navigate something difficult and James will look at me like grumpy as fuck, but he'll go, warrior mindset.
And, you know, maybe warrior's not the imagery you want. Maybe, I don't know what it
warrior
is.
Warrior mindset. And yeah. It's this idea of seeking challenge and delighting in challenge that I think makes incredible creatives.
And I know I don't think you have to have this from the beginning. You know, when we're going to talk about these failures that we had, thinking about both of us in the early stages of our career, thinking about you in your early stages of writing, you were frequently like broken by failure.
Yes. And I think it's a good time to talk about like this idea of having thick skin, because I think it almost sounds like we're saying you need thick skin right here. Like, I'm a highly emotive person. Don't know if you can tell. And I have been really impacted, and I am continually impacted when things don't go the way that I want them to go, because I'm super invested in my creative career. I'm super invested in everything because I don't really have I'm in or I'm out. And I'm not talking about stunting our emotional responses. I'm talking about resiliency. So I don't want you to get thick skin, because I think a part of the beauty of the artist is sensitivity. We're allowed to feel, we're allowed to be disappointed, we're allowed to cry, we're allowed to grieve. But it's about, you know, how long you let that go on for, and then like how you can alchemize that emotion into something, you know, exciting and challenging, and like, okay, well, what's next? That hunger.
Yeah, and that ability to recognize that pain for what it is, which is just a normal human reaction, that it doesn't mean that you're less than, it doesn't mean that you're broken, it doesn't mean that you are a failure.
Yeah,
it means that, you know, you failed. That can be something that you can be sad about, you can react to. When the athlete breaks their ankle and realizes they're out for the rest of the season,
grief. Yeah,
it is incredibly upsetting, but it doesn't mean that they're done
and that they can't do anything.
Yeah, and it doesn't mean that there's not. I mean, I think once again, athletes are a good analogy, because you know, you break your ankle suddenly, or maybe your lower body strength was lacking, so suddenly you go, great. Amazing opportunity to build up my upper body strength.
Yes.
Amazing opportunity to make all the muscles around my ankle more powerful and stronger. Yes. So I'm going to be better when I come back. And I think the same thing for art. Recently, as a lot of you know, I lost several days worth of work on my writing. Not hugely annoying, but very, very annoying in the moment. And it took me a couple of days. I didn't want to write for a couple of days. And then eventually I was like, you know what? I'm going to come back and I'm going to write everything I wrote then. Better,
yeah.
And my backups are going to be much more secure next time.
Yeah.
And it's an opportunity for both those things. Yeah. It's an opportunity to write those scenes better. It's an opportunity to become a better writer. Mm. An opportunity to be more organized as a writer.
I think a lot of people really don't like when I use the word failure. They're like, no, there's no such thing. There's no such thing. But I dislike that perspective. There is such thing. Like, multiple times, it's like when people don't want there to be shitty art. It's like, multiple times I tried to do something, it didn't work, I failed. Again, like, I'm not saying I'm a failure, because I'm so fucking resilient and I'm never going to stop. But I want to be able to talk about failure, and I want creatives to be able to talk about failure. And I think the evasion of even wanting to name the word failure is a mistake.
Yeah, because I think that if you are afraid to say that failure exists, that when inevitably, as it happens for all artists, you fail at something or something doesn't go your way, then your ability to have language to bounce back from that, I think, is so much lessened.
Yeah, I agree.
Because you go, oh, crap, that really hurt. Oh, no, that was really disappointing. Mm. It feels like maybe it was a failure. But no, failures don't exist. So yeah. I don't suddenly have a framework to deal with this thing.
Yeah, I just think I stopped doing gymnastics trying to get around some realities of this journey. Like, sometimes it does fucking suck. Then you can grieve it properly. Fuck, that didn't work. And then we can figure out something else to go on.
And it is mandatory.
Oh, it's mandatory. No one avoids this.
Yeah. And I think that something that really hurt me early in my writing journey was this, like, I desperately wanted my first book to be amazing and to be like the book that was going to like make me a famous author.
Mm.
And then it didn't happen.
Is that true?
Yeah. I really wanted, I thought, because I was a bit more lost in my life then, you know, I was still at uni. I didn't really know what I was wanting to do with my life.
Mm.
Didn't have the business with you. I wasn't secure in my identity as a writer. So I was like, oh, this could save me. Like, this could like be my life's meaning. Like, I could have this amazing career as a writer if this book goes really well. And it didn't happen. And I didn't, it really hurt. Well, it was really disappointing.
The funny thing with these kind of failures is that there's often not an explicit moment of failure. Totally. You like just slowly realize that what you wanted didn't happen.
Yeah.
It's like this slow fuck.
I can't remember why I started the thought.
Sorry.
No, it's okay. Not your fault. I was already lost.
You were explaining, you know, our failure, I guess.
Yeah, and I think because I wanted it, and then I wanted it so badly, and then when I did eventually fail, that was a real defining moment for me.
Mm.
Was I going to never write anything again, or was I going to write another book and another book and another book until I got better?
Yeah.
Like, was I just going to, I sort of decided, well, I'm just going to keep writing no matter what. And that was a really important moment for me.
I think that's a really profound moment when an artist goes, well, I'm just going to keep doing this anyway. Because it's like...
Yeah,
because
that's what I want
to
do.
That's a cure-all. Like, that takes the power entirely into your own hands. It's like, well, I'm just going to keep on doing this. Mm. There's really no stopping me.
Yeah, and I think if we're too afraid of failure, then we put too much pressure on those moments. Because I think I was afraid of failure. I was like, oh, if this book doesn't get big, then I have to write a whole other book.
Yes.
And I was like, I was afraid of that moment. And then I hadn't sort of developed this attitude of, well, I'm just going to keep writing, and I'm going to enjoy the process anyway.
Yeah.
And I think being so afraid of that failure moment held me back from in that first book as well, helped me back from writing as well as I could at certain times. And it certainly has helped me back in submitting my work for publication, which as everyone knows who listens to this podcast, I'm really bad at doing.
Well, same, baby. It was the fucking worst.
But it was almost like the rebound from the failure was like, well, I'm just going to be process-driven, as we talked about with Sean in the Sean podcast.
If anyone hasn't listened to that Sean podcast, it was fucking banging.
So good.
And we spoke specifically about James's now almost obsession with process as a protection against having the vulnerability of desire, really.
Yeah. Yeah, this is way easier for me to do in business than it is for me to do in my artistic pursuits, I think. Like, I could learn a lot more from my ability to deal with failure in business, I think. Especially because failure in business seems less personal to me or something. It's like, well, it's just money, just business.
That's so interesting.
What do you think?
Yeah. I think we feel like we have a lot more agency in our business because it's like when something doesn't go right, we have like so many options. So like, let's think of a business one that didn't go well. So let's look at my first ever course that I did, which was called, I think it was called Write Your Fucking Novel. And we sold like, I don't know, like a dozen. Like basically the hosting costs were way higher than what we were earning. Like it was a failure, really. And like when that happened, it was like, okay, well, we could do like a million other things.
Yeah.
Whereas it's when your book's rejected, you're like,
Maybe I'm just bad at writing or something. Whereas I feel like you weren't like...
You can't be as creatively adaptive.
Yeah.
I mean, I think maybe we could learn from business and really get a bit more creative with how we ship out.
Well, when your course fails, it's not like you were like, well, I guess I'm bad at courses. It doesn't feel as personal as what I think I'm getting at.
Yeah, I agree.
I think that when something doesn't go quite right in business, it's like, that's not me to my core. Whereas writing feels so much more vulnerable. And
yeah, definitely. I mean, also it's like, such a huge investment of time. Like, it's so expensive, like, writing a book.
It's opportunity, massive opportunity cost.
Yeah. But again, like, we come back to this. I'm always going to do this. I'm just going to keep on doing it.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
It didn't really matter.
Exactly. No, it didn't really matter. I mean, and that's the thing is I was allowed to be upset that my first book didn't get picked up. But, like, am I still upset about it now? Definitely not.
Yeah, interesting.
No.
I mean, I'm not upset about Esther. My first book not being picked up either, which I'll go into this failure, I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, very, very similar story. Like when I was writing Esther, I was navigating so many different muggle jobs and I was so fucking depressed. I didn't want to be in any of them. I was like, I have to get out. And I put huge amount of pressure on Esther to rescue me from this life that I really didn't enjoy. I wanted to write full time. And it was just like everything depended on Esther being published. And Esther was rejected so many times. And actually, I got one really fucked rejection. I had this like beautiful neighbor who worked in publishing. He worked in educational publishing, but he had a connection with, I think it was a Bloomsbury editor. And so Esther got sent to a Bloomsbury editor and this woman read it and this woman fucking eviscerated it and sent it back to him. And it was so brutal. And
you're like, what, like 22, 23 years old or something?
Yes,
like, just a little baby.
And Stephen sent it back to me and he was like, look, I'm really sorry. I don't know if it's going to be useful for you to read this, but this is what she said. And it was like, really, like, it was kind of like, I have no idea why an editor would be that mean. It was like, she just took out all her anger on me and my book. But she said things like unreadable and...
It's because your grammar was bad, which is an Amy trait. I think I've heard she really fixated on that.
She was obsessed with how I couldn't do my grammar.
Yeah.
Similarly, I had a writing teacher, I talk about this one a lot, who wrote the word stupid all over my manuscript, which was honestly not a failure, but it felt like a failure for me. It was a failure on her part as a teacher, but for me it was like, I mean, that, when I got that manuscript back from that teacher, and I also got it back from a whole lot of beta readers, like, I was broken. That was probably my biggest break I've ever had. And that was for Esther. It was horrible.
Yeah, fucking stupid.
I cried so hard.
As in, it was fucking stupid that they said fucking stupid.
Amen.
Annoying. It's funny. Amy and I have both had this writing teacher, and I really loved her, and Amy didn't enjoy
obviously, class I didn't like her.
Obviously, that was a really horrible moment, but it's so funny, like, how different teachers, different people need different things from different teachers. Obviously, this teacher never said stupid on my work, so...
She liked you. Do you know, she liked men.
Yeah, she did like men.
She really liked men. She didn't like me. I was a young woman, really young, like 22, and she did not like me at all.
Mm.
And you could just feel it.
Yeah, it was interesting.
Anyway, she's my arch nemesis. I think about her all the time.
I want to keep going on the book track, because then something interesting happened with Elizabeth, which was that we only had a limited budget for Elizabeth. So we got you a structural edit and we got you a copy edit, but we didn't get you a proof.
Yes.
And I think what we then really, and then the first wave of reviews was like, needed a tighter edit.
Yeah.
On the proof. I'm like, well, we just didn't have the
funds
to do it.
Yeah.
So we had some more mistakes got through. Eventually, I think we fixed the majority of those because Amy did the audiobook, and like, you physically, when you're reading it out loud, like, you cannot miss most of these things. I think it ended up getting picked. But then, regrettably, we were like, okay, well, number one priority is a proofreader. Mm-hmm. So it's like learning from that. Those early reviews really taught us.
Yeah.
Also,
I was like... heartbroken, though.
Yeah.
Heartbroken.
Yeah.
You know, I just published my first book ever. And it was like, and like, I had gone over it so hard. I've had multiple people go over it, but we never paid a professional proofreader. Mm-hmm. And there were like maybe 15 like errors.
Yeah.
And the first reviews were all like, there's so many mistakes. Like, people messaging me privately to tell me that there were mistakes in the book. And I was just like heartbroken because I wasn't getting any feedback about it other than the fact that there were spelling mistakes in my book. And I felt so, I had a big cry.
I mean, and then of course, lo and behold, as soon as we do the proofread and as soon as we fix up Elizabeth, like pretty much all the reviews other than that one who hated what we did to Anne Boleyn were having incredibly positive.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like, we just knew after that, quote-unquote, failure. It was a failure. A failure because, you know, it wasn't failing our fault. We had to make decisions. You have to make choices.
Yeah.
We made choices. And we knew from what happened there how to prioritize after that.
Yeah, definitely. You have to have a proof on all Amy work. You have to have a proof on all work, really, but especially Amy work.
Because even, like, I consider myself to be much more thorough than Amy. But I don't want to rag on you too much, Amy, but the volume of mistakes you will get on any manuscript... Because you're so sweet. You're so talented in so many ways. Like, you're such a great writer, but just no eye for detail.
It is shocking.
And the volume... And then I find it... I try as hard as I can often to fix an Amy manuscript, but then, like, because there's so much. And this, I'm literally just spelling grammar. I'm not saying, like, usually the sentences all are great and beautiful and they flow really well and the structure's working and the message is great and the everything. And then it's literally just spelling and grammar.
Mm.
And... There's such a huge volume.
Yeah, it's like you're going to have to miss some.
I'm going
to
miss some.
Linda missed some. Kate missed some. Like, so many people.
Yeah, we had like five different professionals read that book and they missed them, but none of them, because none of them were doing an actual proofread.
Yeah.
So anyway, that was a good lesson.
It was. And again, like, I grieved. I was very upset. And then we learnt, and I've learnt a lot from that launch.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Some other failures.
There are so many. There are so many to remember.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. I mean, like, bad reviews, if you want to think about them as failures.
Yeah.
We've been using bad reviews lately as marketing.
Yeah, it's been really good, and people love it.
Yeah, people fucking love it. I think I'm going to post some tonight.
We had a great bad review the other day, and it was from a middle-aged white man who was basically just like, I don't understand this book about lesbians. Like, what's going on? Like, oh, lesbians all seemed like very one-dimensional. It's like, if a middle-aged white man, and he openly admitted, he's like, I would never read a book like this normally. If that guy thinks that your characters are bad, they're probably good. That's probably a good sign. You don't have to do anything with that knowledge. You don't have to worry your mindset that...
I just love you found it.
Yeah. I know.
Yeah. Anyway, so yeah, we've been utilizing these reviews as marketing, and I think it's worked.
Yeah.
I think it has worked.
Oh, it worked incredibly.
People are like, immediately buy it.
You got so many sales after you posted that. Was it a reel of, or was it a static?
It was a story. I didn't even put it as a reel. It was a story.
Wow. You immediately got like 20 copies sold.
Yeah.
And that's on KDP. I don't know. Across all formats, I don't know. But I'm sure it was more probably.
Yeah. That one was a funny one that was like, this book is historically inaccurate out the ass. Whenever anyone tells me that my books are historically accurate, I'm like, please, please tell me what you think is historically inaccurate. I need to know.
You know, and also you have two people who did history at university here. You know, I did 7 years of history, lots of historiography.
What is history?
I have to say, I want to get in a room with people and be like, what do you mean? Like, I'm sorry. No, you weren't there.
Yeah.
We don't know anything for sure about history. Like, even if you get a document and it said this happened.
Maybe it didn't.
Maybe it didn't. Maybe that person's lying. Maybe that person misremembered. Maybe their source misremembered. Like, there's so many things. Even if you get material evidence, it's even hard to place that in context. It's like, we have material evidence that this thing was here. It was like, well, do you know it was there on that date?
Mm.
Well, it has the date written on it. Do you know they recorded the date correctly?
Mm.
No, you don't. Oh, we have this dating method. It's like, is it 100% accurate? No, it's not. Like, we just don't know fucking shit. Like, we can piece...
Oh, you got him off on one.
Sorry, being a historian, I was literally thinking on my walk today, what's the point of having a podcast if I can't go on a few rants about history? I was like, I had a few ancient history rants that I had saved up, but I'm going to deploy at some point.
Okay,
but
ready.
I mean, this kind of Hayden White post-structuralist view of history, which is just, there's no access to the actual historical event. Like, as soon as it's gone, you've lost the archive. And yes, you can be a detective and you can post, you can do probabilities and you can do like, this. It's likely this happened, but to say something's just wrong.
You're okay, wrong.
I mean, sure, there's a window of probability
of wrongness,
there.
Yeah.
To say that Anne Boleyn had laser guns, I'm going to say that's probably false.
Although that is a whole new book.
But to be like, oh, Anne Boleyn didn't say that. Well, how do you know?
She could have.
There weren't any witches in court when Anne Boleyn was killed. How do you know?
Well,
who would have recorded the fact that there were witches there? I'm sorry, the rant can be over now if you want.
No, but thank you.
And again, it just boils my blood when someone says an historical fiction book is historically inaccurate. Because for starters, they're not aiming for accuracy.
No.
So take your little amateur historian glasses off. So I'm sorry you watched one documentary about Anne Boleyn. I'm sorry you watched The Queen. No, not The Queen. Elizabeth, that movie. And then you have some idea. Oh, no, the other Boleyn girl. And now you think you know who Anne Boleyn was. Like, I'm really sorry, but you don't.
Amen, James.
If you have it, I think that the better you get at history, like someone with a PhD in Anne Boleyn is hopefully going to be the most humble about historical fiction. Like, hopefully those people are coming. I don't know any of my friends from university, of my lecturers who refuse to watch history. You know, like, none of the people in the Roman history department were like, fucking Gladiator, so inaccurate. They were like, hey, we go there for a good time, you know? And if you're looking for historical inaccuracies, you're just going to ruin your day.
It will ruin your day.
Anyway.
Thank you, James. That was a 4-minute rant. Thank you so much, James.
My pleasure. I mean, it was the thing about...
Wait.
No, not talking about history. I'm talking about a failure. But in the early stage of our businesses, because Amy was coming off getting fired from her cafe job and just needed any income was a success. So it's like, sure, it took Amy a couple of months to get her first coaching client.
Mm.
But when... So it was like, yes, that's failures, but we were already at zero anyway. We were living at my mum and dad's house.
A lot of our failures were so delightful to us because we expected nothing.
Yeah, we were like, great. When we launched the journaling compendium, like that launch right now, we would see that as a failure.
Oh, huge failure.
It's like 20 people bought in the first few days. And we were like, oh my God.
I was so excited.
And we were like, that's amazing. We're like, let's fucking go. Let's go. So like, I think that's another thing where it's
perspective.
Like, it's perspective as well.
I was going to talk about...
You just won't
let me talk today.
Go for it, Amo. I'm very sorry.
Patreon.
Yes.
I had a Patreon and it was so sweet and I had all these offerings and it was like, let me beta to read your books. And anyway, it just basically didn't work. I made like $5 a month. I tried so hard on it. And everyone who joined for a dollar, I would send an email being like, please send me your books. Oh, I can read something. And like, it was really, I planned it out so hard. And I remember one writer emailing you back basically saying it was like a pity. She doesn't need me to read her books. This was like kind of like a pity dollar that she gave me.
You just was so vulnerable so many times. Like just thinking back to you and how hard you tried for years for nothing.
Mm.
Like you tried so hard. You put yourself out there constantly for like 6 years for nothing. Like for silence.
No, it was so hard.
And for other people in our lives probably thinking you were stupid, mm-hmm. like thinking you were embarrassing, cringe. And then, you know, suddenly you're an overnight success after 10 years. And it's like, the amount of shit that you ate to get there, of course, I'm not saying that we were like ever in danger or but it was just rejection after rejection after rejection after rejection. Like constantly.
So much rejection.
Like, constantly people being like, I have no interest in what you're providing.
And in fact, I think it's stupid.
And I think it's stupid. And then to like selling thousands of courses, having thousands of people in our membership, like not right, you know, like over time.
Yeah.
Selling thousands of copies of your books, like it's just incredible.
Thank you, baby.
Because it was like zero for ages. It was essentially you begging people for ages.
I can't tell you how much of a failure I felt for so long. And it was, hard. There was just a lot of silence to navigate. I think silence is often the failure that feels the most acute.
Yeah.
And speaking of which, a good failure to reflect on would be when the publishing house took Elizabeth to acquisitions.
Mm-hmm.
That was an incredibly hard failure for me to navigate. So Elizabeth was picked up and taken to an acquisitions meeting by a publishing house, which basically means they decide as a company whether they want to take it. So it was very exciting. And I had three editors at the house say, we love it, we want it. They took it to acquisitions and the editor said they would call me and give me a yes or no. And James was going away on that day. He was going to Germany for an academic conference.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was alone.
And we were like sitting in the airport and I remember we were just sitting there and I was like, waiting for the last possible minute to leave just so I could be there for you.
Oh, I just love her so much. It makes me feel really emotional.
Yeah.
I love her so much.
She's so fucking cute.
And,
and like the whole time we were just like, there's no guarantee of anything. And you just kept picking yourself back up. And it was amazing. Like, I couldn't believe it. Like, I would watch you get run over basically by a proverbial truck.
Yeah.
And just, you'd just be like, well, then she's back at it again a week later.
Yeah, again, like, I was just always going to keep writing.
And then the worst part about that whole process was that then they just never said no. They just never said anything. They just ghosted you.
I was just waiting. Like, me and James are sitting there with my phone, my fucking phone, just waiting for them.
And they said they would call that afternoon.
They said they would call, and they never called. And then I, like, followed up feeling like a fucking pain in the ass, and they didn't reply, and they never replied. And they said, we're still thinking about it. We're not entirely sure. Like, I think basically they went, obviously they went no, but they didn't want to tell me.
Yeah, which is fucking stupid.
It was the most painful thing. And I had prepped so hard for it not going well. And I was like, I'm going to do this. I'm going to take myself to the movies. I'm going to eat popcorn. She's so cute.
She's so cute.
She took such good care of herself. I remember that's one of the first times that I've ever really connected with Lola, who's now our greatest friend, who was my first client, one of my greatest friends now. We're going to meet her finally in San Fran. And she sent me money to go and get me a coffee after all of that shit show went down. And it's just like, she just navigated so much.
Yeah.
And I love her so much for doing that.
So lost for so long. Just looking for anything that might work.
Yeah. So cute. I'm so grateful for her. Like, I think, like, I just want to go hold her, especially on that day. Like, I just want to go hold her and be like, it's so hard right now, but it's just going to get so much better.
I'm so proud of you.
Thank you. It makes me very emotional.
It's amazing.
Other failures.
I feel like that's good enough.
Yeah, there's a billion others.
There's a billion others. Yeah. It's been 27 minutes, which isn't pretty much a record for us on a solo episode.
Do you have any other failures that you particularly would like to look at?
I was thinking on my walk today about and I've talked about it on the Sean podcast, but in my honours year at uni, and I'd done really well at uni the whole time. Like, I'd done really well on my coursework. I always got good marks. And then I had my honours year, which is like you do a 20,000 word thesis. It's sort of like to cap off your undergraduate. And once again, did really well on my coursework. I got top marks on all my coursework. And then the thesis, I just wrote a bad thesis. It was really muddled. I didn't come up with a good idea. I was confused. Like, it was the first really long form piece of writing I've ever done. And I just didn't stick the landing. And got pretty bad feedback on the thesis. And it was really painful.
Mm.
But there was one chapter of the thesis that I loved and I got some good feedback on. And it was about economic history.
Mm.
And that was what was really exciting to me the whole time. And I was like, do you know what? It took me a while. I'm going to pick myself up and I'm going to go back. And I'm going to do my master's and it's going to be on economic history.
Because
that's what I'm interested in. I wasn't really interested in my honors thesis. And I learned from that. I did economic history for my master's and I fucking loved it. Did super well. Just crushed it. Like, finished, like, no stress. Like, I was really stressed by my honors thesis. This 50,000 word thesis came together so much more easily than a 20,000 word thesis. And got really great feedback from the markers.
Who was like the guy?
Yeah, I got marked by the world expert on the Middle Republican Roman economy. I know, and he was like amazing thesis. He was like amazing thesis, one of the best postgraduate theses I've ever read. And it was so good.
Yeah, amazing.
And I was so proud of it. And it was really hard at the time, but I think I learned from that little kernel that I was able to learn from and be like, no, I want to do, I think I could still have something here. I think I can still do this. Even though like my first attempt at a long form academic thing was essentially a failure. And I did it. It was great.
I'm really proud of you. I haven't thought about that in a while.
And like, it took me a while to, at first, like the first 6 months of my master's, I was like, oh, I don't have the chops. But then as I got into the work and enjoyed it, and I was like, no, I've got something here. And I was like, no, I do have the chops.
You do have the chops.
And I started writing fiction at the same time. And I think that gave me some confidence too.
Yeah.
I was like, no, I'm writing all the time. Like, I'm just a writing machine.
Yeah, you are.
And I was writing my book in the morning, and then I was writing my thesis in the afternoon, which is this amazing flow. It's not the best time of my life in the end.
Yeah, it was beautiful.
So good.
Yeah, there's a lot of magic that comes from this. A lot of tears, a lot of magic.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not that James really cries. Except for that one time at schoolies when you were drunk.
Yeah. I was raised in a very complicated masculine environment.
You were.
Okay? It's not my fault.
No.
Do we have any news and announcements? Just once again, please, we would love to see you in America.
Yeah, there's a few tickets left. Getting more and more warnings about low stock, but there are
definitely left. And a big thank you to Patty is doing the videography for both San Francisco and Los Angeles. And she said, she was like, do you want me to pay for my ticket? I was like, we were like, obviously not, because you're doing the videography. So you're coming not as a guest, but as a videographer. She's like, okay, well, can I still buy a ticket? And then can someone else come in my place like for free? So there's one Patty spot. If someone wants to, the first person to email me about a Patty spot, you can come for free.
In which one?
Either.
Okay, cool.
You can come to either San Francisco or Los Angeles. So first person to email me at support@amymitney.com. And that you can come for free.
Yeah, I'll give you a free ticket.
So that was really lovely.
Amazing. And
we will be doing a workshop in London later.
Oh, people ask me all the time.
Amy's doing a joint workshop with Africa Brooke.
Yeah.
In London.
Soft launch.
Yeah, soft launch. Sorry, maybe Africa didn't want me to say that, but you know, it's happening. It's probably happening. Knowing Amy and Africa, though, like I'm sure some other thing might happen.
A lot of energy. But for I would those say two
there's
girls.
A 65% chance it's happening. Yeah.
Amazing. We've got to get Africa on the pod.
We do. We do.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you for witnessing and being with us as we go over some of our failures. Very grateful to have had the podcast along this journey.
Interesting is when you said we've got to get Africa on the pod, and I went, oh, I can't be in that conversation.
Why?
Because I was like, you're both too good. Like, you're both too powerful.
We need someone to temper us.
And I'm going to be like, I would just be like a tiny little sputtering candle in that conversation.
James, but, that's an interesting narrative.
I'm going to back up, and I'm going to be like, no, I can do it. Okay, we Africa love you all.
Africa has a lot of space to hold for you.
I know.
And you're very good at interviewing.
Thank you, Amy.
My pleasure.
We love you all. Thank you for listening.
Thanks for being with us, guys. So grateful.
I can't believe we're going to have 3 weeks in a row. So
God.
Let's go.
Damn.
Let's go.